Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, welcome to the first Lords Podcast of 2015. I'm very pleased to be joined by Middlesex and Ireland bowler Tim Murta, along with All Out Cricket editor Phil Walker. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Hi, Will.
Good to be here.
Good to see you both. Now, we're just a few days away from the start of the World Cup, with England and Australia due to get proceedings underway in Melbourne on Saturday. We'll preview the tournament. Also on the podcast, we ask, have bats become too big in the modern game? And following the success of the Australian Big Bash, are there any lessons to be learnt for the domestic game in England? But before all that, I'd like to ask Tim some questions that have come in from listeners on Twitter using the hashtag AskMertz. So Tim, first one up from @KerryCricket, who purports to be County Kerry Cricket.
Yeah.
How disappointing is having an injury so close to the World Cup, and has it affected your training and rehab?
Pretty disappointing, seeing as it's probably going to be the only World Cup that I could have played in. It was a massive shame. It was such an innocuous injury. We were literally just warming up for a game in Dubai and playing touch rugby. Went over on my foot and heard a crack, and basically the fifth metatarsal fractured. Subsequently kind of put me out for the tournament. And, you know, I was hopeful that I'd be able to get back in time, and, if the management had taken a bit of a risk on me, and I was confident that I'd be fit by the second, third game and for the rest of the tournament, but they decided to go another way, and I can't really blame them for that. But yeah, it was a massive disappointment to be at home kind of watching the games rather than be out there in Australia with the boys.
I don't want to start on a sour note, but how's your training and rehab been? Has it been a bit tougher, obviously, with that kind of in the background?
Kind of, but I'm quite determined. Once I put my mind to something, I'm sort of like to kind of prove people wrong and get back quicker than a lot of people have said. And I'm probably a week or two ahead of schedule in my rehab now, which has been great. The first 2 weeks I was spent in the hyperbaric diving chamber in the hospital over the road, so I did 2 hours a day in there with oxygen treatment, which seems to have really helped. It's kind of helped the bone heal quicker, and I was really pleased with the results that we got from that. So I think that gave me a bit of a head start. And since then, I've had no real problems. Got rid of the crutches pretty early and walking around now, and just started bowling this week, sort of off a few yards, and just trying to get the muscles in the foot used to working again. So, it's all, ahead of schedule. And as I say, hopefully be back playing before long.
Great stuff. So on the road to recovery. Second question, Tim. This is from Michael Evans. Ireland have a great chance of getting to the World Cup quarterfinals. Who would you like to play and why?
That's jumping ahead of things a bit, isn't it? I'm sure the boys will not quite be thinking that far ahead at the moment. But the way things are panned out in the group, we'd like to think that we've got a good chance of beating UAE and Zimbabwe, and then hopefully one victory against a West Indies or a Pakistan, they have an off day, or any of those sides in that group would hopefully be enough to see us through to the quarterfinal. So, yeah, I'm sure there'll be, West Indies being the first game, that's a massive game for us, and, they're in a little bit of turmoil at the moment, and you're never quite sure what you're going to get with them. So hopefully we can cause an upset in that first game, and that will give us real kind of confidence going into the rest of the group games.
And just to jump in there, you say from an Irish point of view, from a neutral's point of view, everyone's watching that game.
The West Indies have been a shambles for the last couple of months, and it's a rather sad state of affairs for anyone who loves the World game. That fixture has had a kind of a glow for a number of months ever since the groups were sorted, and I wouldn't even say that an upset is necessarily on the cards if Ireland do beat them. The state of the West Indies side in terms of its morale at the minute, it's almost, they're almost, there's almost a mutiny there, you know, and Gale is vocal as the leader of that band that it's a mess. I think Ireland can well go ahead and win that game. And if they do, then they only need to play averagely against the lesser sides, and then they're in the quarters. Then anything can happen.
So who will they face? Go on, Phil, you can answer the questions, because Tim's diplomatically avoided.
All right, okay. I think they will face Australia. I think Ireland will finish, and I do genuinely believe this, I think Ireland will finish fourth, and I think Australia will walk Group A.
Great stuff.
And then they might have a fight on their hands.
So then who are we going to have in the semis?
Oh, I'm not missing many.
Tim, final question on Twitter. After the disappointment of missing the World Cup through injury, and this is from ZK Go, where does Mert see his future in the international game? You said just a moment ago you don't see yourself making another World Cup, so what
well,
now?
Well, you know, it's 4 years is a long way off. I'm 33 now. You know, there's still an outside possibility that I could make 2019, but being realistic, that might not happen. So, you know, I still very much enjoy, I've enjoyed, you know, the 2 or 3 years I've been playing with Ireland, and I've no kind of intentions of giving that up yet. And, you know, especially there's a chance for Test cricket in a few years' time, which, you know, is appealing, would be appealing to anyone. But I suppose more so because I play mainly the longer format of the game here at Middlesex. So to help Ireland get sort of Test status would be, is another goal of mine, and hopefully that will come true in the next few years. But a bit of hard work to go.
And on that, Mertz, realistically, 5 years from now, maybe 7 years from now, are Ireland playing Test cricket? What's your feeling, and what's the feeling amongst the inner sanctum of Irish cricket?
I'd like to think so, yeah. And you know, there's some good young players coming up, but whether they're quite of the standard that, you know, Irish cricket's had almost a bit of a golden generation with, you know, your Joyce and your O'Brien brothers and Porterfield and Wilson, and Sterling and sort of guys like that. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the sort of 7 years' time, you know, a lot of those players may probably won't be playing then. So you've got to look beneath that, and it, maybe they're not quite at that same level yet, but hopefully with the chance of more cricket and more teams coming over to Ireland and, mm-hmm. and more tours to get a bit of experience, these younger lads will step up and become sort of the Ed Joyces and guys like that to lead kind of Irish cricket into that next chapter. But as I said, there's a lot of hard work to be done in between, and you know, hopefully that will happen.
Just very briefly, over in Ireland, is there a kind of groundswell of interest amongst the punters, amongst the locals, yeah. which in turn then generates money for sponsorship and so on?
Yeah, I can't claim to be sort of an expert, having not lived there and not spent, you know, massive amount of time there. But every time I've been over for games and training and, you know, and speaking to the lads, more importantly, there seems to be a real kind of buzz around the country, and certainly the interest in cricket, you know, anytime we've got into taxis or spoken to taxi drivers, you know, they seem to know about cricket, I think more so than we'd realise living over here. Mm-hmm. And the game is flourishing over there. The club game is, you know, it's a strong league, and they take it very seriously. And, you know, hopefully with that kind of, as I say, these tournaments, these major tournaments are sort of what Kevin O'Brien did in 2011, just, you know, did wonders for Irish cricket, yeah. and something similar this year would do, hopefully boost it again. So that's what, you know, I know the administrators and everyone involved in Irish cricket is hoping will happen.
Yeah, and I think most neutrals as well. If the game's going to grow, yeah. then we need this to happen.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think you want the likes of ourselves and Afghanistan to be pushing Zimbabwe and yeah. Bangladesh, and mm-hmm. You know, I'm not suddenly saying we're going to beat Australia and want to play a 7-match series against them, but we need more cricket yeah, against sure. Zimbabwe and Bangladesh and sort of triangular tournaments like that.
And it's a special year for you here at Middlesex. It's your benefit year, so tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, benefit years don't come around very often, and I think less so these days, because there's a lot more kind of movement between counties, having moved myself sort of 8 years ago. But when Angus Fraser told me, it was a massive honour and a massive kind of privilege, and it's something that you don't really think about as a cricketer. And it's as I said, you know, I'm just really grateful to be awarded it this year. And you know, we've got some great events lined up, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And you know, my focus is still on my cricket, because I want to keep playing. It's not like I want to have a benefit and walk away and finish my career like that. You know, I still feel like I've got some good cricket and some good years left in me. So that's going to be my number one focus. And sort of, I've got a really good committee and chairman who are helping me out with the benefit side. So hopefully they'll look after most of that throughout the summer.
Great. So what type of events have you got lined up for that?
We've got sort of a curry night. Our first event's a curry night we're having in the Household Cavalry. We're doing it in the officer's mess, which is quite an exclusive kind of venue. You know,
you have to wear the gown normally.
I don't know yet, actually. But I think a lot of them, I think there's going to be a table where they will be dressed up and in the traditional uniform and stuff, which will be great. We're looking at doing a dinner in the House of Lords, looking at having poker nights and a wine tasting challenge here. We've got a long room lunch in the pavilion. We've got a Strictly Come Dancing kind of themed ball towards the end of the year.
Is Ramps involved in that?
Ramps hopefully will be involved, dependent on England commitments.
Okay.
Yet to find out.
It's got prioritised.
Yeah, I know. It's in November time, so hopefully he'll have his dancing shoes on and we can talk him into doing a couple of things for that. So and then a couple of matches. We're playing a match at Hampstead and a match down at Reigate in Surrey, where I kind of played most of my cricket as a junior. A lot of stuff going on.
Great stuff. A year to look forward to.
Yeah.
Right, I'd like to turn our attentions to the World Cup. England take on Australia in the opening game on Saturday, this Saturday coming up. Gets underway at 3:30 a.m. our time. Owen Morgan and his side have been written off by much of the press and fans as well, following a poor tour to Sri Lanka, which resulted in Alistair Cook being sacked as captain, and then a thrashing in the tri-series final to Australia. But the captain of England's women's side, Charlotte Edwards, believes that her male counterparts could spring a surprise.
Do you know what? I think they're going to do better than everyone probably thinks they are, and I think they're probably happy that everyone's written them off, and I think they've got a good balanced team out there. I think it's great to see Owen Morgan score runs in his first game as England captain, and I'm confident that England can do well. I think they've got some really exciting youngsters, and I think it's watch this space with them. I think hopefully they're going to surprise a few people and hopefully go a long way in the competition.
Well, I guess the question is, can England win this World Cup?
Over Christmas time, and I may have had a few by this point, I put £20 in England to win it at 10-1. And I'd actually forgotten that I'd put that bet on until I returned to my betting account a few weeks later to find that bet in there. I'm not expecting that money to come back, but equally, I'm not writing it off either.
Well, they've gone down to 9-1 now.
They have on the basis of a couple of games against India, maybe. I'm not sure. It's unlikely they are where they should be, I would say, on terms of form and crucially in terms of experience and kind of battle-hardened nous. That said, I refute anybody who says there's not a lot of talent in that team. And they have some intriguing identities within it. You know, Joss Butler is a superstar in the making. Moeen Ali is intriguing up the top. He could blow out and get you 100 runs in 10 knocks, or he could go out there and smash Mitchell Johnson over extra cover for 6. You don't know what that kid's going to do, but he's got serious talent. Ian Bell, I'm intrigued by. I've been banging the drum of him opening the batting in one-day cricket for a long time. He was brilliant in 2012, inexplicably lost his way, or rather was pushed aside. He's back where he belongs. I think there's something to watch in this team. I fear they may be a bowler light. I'm delighted to see Finney back performing well. He's obviously a big friend of yours, Mertzen. He used to write for us as a diarist for the magazine. He's a smashing top lad, and it's great to see him performing again. He could go at 5.5, 6 and over and be ineffective, or he could win you games of cricket. And there's a number of players like that, I think, in this team. So I'm not writing them off.
And I've got 20 quid to show for it.
Absolutely. Well, Stephen Finn is a player I'd like to talk about because he is a match winner, and especially in Australian conditions. Tim, you know him extremely well. Have you been talking to him in the lead up to the World Cup? How's he feeling?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a bit of that spark back now. I think, England were desperate to kind of get him back in, and he just had something different. You know, he is a wicket taker, as you say, and it might be that he goes for runs every now and again, but which irks him and sort of irks him that people kind of say that about him as well, because he likes to think that he's a bit of an Angus Fraser kind of role as well. But he can't do everything. He's from where he was sort of a year ago. It's just great to see, because you know he was as down as I've seen a county / international cricketer ever be. He was in a really dark place. So and that's taken a lot of hard work with Richard Johnson and Gus and also the England coaching staff as well to get him back to where he is now. I think if you spoke to him, he still feel that he's not quite at his best, and you know there's still room for improvement, which is good to see. But you know he's starting to get that confidence back, and the confidence is a massive thing for him, and he thrives on that. And hopefully, sort of on wickets that suit him a bit more sort of pace and bounce, he can be a real threat during this World Cup. And hopefully he kicks on from here and has a really good tournament.
And just the other thing on Finney and what he represents within this team, I think the game has moved on so much that in a way it's more effective to take 3 for 65 than take 1 for 45. Yeah. You know, yeah. Scores around the 300 mark, they're standard fare now, and so you need players who can influence the match in the middle overs. And Finney, okay, you know, he's going to bowl you a four ball, but he's also going to nick off a world-class player. And that's what England have lacked in the last couple of years. They've lacked that kind of energy in the middle overs. They tend to go through the motions a little bit. So to have him back is intriguing, really. And I'm interested to see how this team play out. I think it's got character in the way that it hasn't necessarily had in previous years. And it'll be interesting to see.
And the other big decision that England made over the Christmas period was obviously the sacking of Cook, and I'd like to focus more on Owen Morgan now as captain, obviously with the strong Middlesex connection. You know Owen very well.
Yeah.
What's he like to play under as a captain, and what can he bring to that England side?
He, we had a poor year in white ball cricket last year, and he was captain for the first time for the whole year, and you know that was nothing to do with his captaincy. It was just, you know, we didn't play very well throughout the year, but he was good. He just brings a real kind of fresh enthusiasm. He's very much a positive kind of looking person. He doesn't dwell on, you know, if he has a bad day, he's off home, he's forgotten about it, and doesn't sort of let it affect him. And he just brings a kind of different kind of buzz and something fresh to the team, which I suppose that they've probably looked like they've needed for a while now. I think he'll be really good, and hopefully the main thing is that he scores runs as well, and everyone wants to see him back scoring runs, and he's had a bit of a lean time the last year or so in ODI cricket, but he's a match winner, and he's England's best player in my opinion.
Agreed.
And if England are going to go far in this tournament, he needs to be firing and scoring runs, and I think that's probably more important than the whole captaincy thing, because although you can get funky a little bit in captaincy, there's, you know, it's fairly kind of set in stone what happens. The field goes back and you're almost dictated to by power plays and stuff like that. So whilst there are things that you can do, it's more him scoring hundreds that are going to see England get through the group, obviously, and then push on further.
Mm-hmm. And who do you two think, if it's not England, which it may well not be, who's your favourite for the tournament?
Well, Australia are rightly favourites. I have a feeling for South Africa. Again, I think they might be maybe a bowler light, but Tahir, again, he's going to go for a few, but may well affect a game. He is a wicket taker. They might be a seamer light, they might be a batsman light, but they do happen to have two of the greatest players of all time, batting one and four. So, and also one of the greatest fast bowlers of all time. With Morkel backing Steyn up and Philander backing those two up, I think that they've got a very, very strong side. Australia bat all the way down, and I think that's where they separate themselves. It's between those two for me. And as a dark horse, I would say England.
And Tim, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think you can look too much further than those teams. You know, New Zealand play all their games in their home conditions and generally kind of do well in World Cups, don't they? And sort of, you know, they'll be a good shout for a semi-final maybe. But I'd have to agree, sort of Australia, you know, if their bowling attack fires, you kind of saw Mitchell Starc even in that recent series, looked real dangerous. So yeah. They've also got strength in depth as well. They've got some good bowlers, and you know, being at home, it'd be difficult to look past them. So yeah, I agree. South Africa.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It just depends how, once they get to the semi-final stage, how they cope with that. But I'd say those two and New Zealand have got a shout. Being in their own conditions.
All teams with plenty of big hitting batsmen, which brings us on to our next topic, bat sizes. Now, it's a common sight in modern day cricket, the mishit shot sailing over the boundary for six. It's left many grumbling that bats are simply too big and gives batsmen an unfair advantage. But others feel it makes a game much more exciting to watch. MCC says they'll monitor the performance of bats at the upcoming World Cup, and the ICC's chief exec, Dave Richardson, wants boundary ropes to be set to at least 90 metres. So the question is, are bats too big? Tim, as a bowler...
you have to answer this one.
See, as a bowler, I have to say that they are, but, you know, I slightly disagree with that in a way. You know, the technology's been great and... you know, the bats are so good these days that I think it makes for... I'm on the side of it makes more interesting cricket, even if it means that I'm going for a few more runs than perhaps years gone by. I'd say it's more... A few people have said sort of it's more the restrictions in the field that have made the biggest kind of change. And I also think the ball as well. Like the white ball 10 years ago used to swing for 10, 15 overs. And be nice to bowl with, and it's definitely had a complete makeover since then. It swings, if you're lucky, it swings for two or three overs these days.
And you found that around the world?
Definitely, yeah. And I think if you speak to most bowlers, I don't know. I think I don't know whether they've taken some of the lacquer off the balls, but they're definitely different from certainly when I started playing one day cricket, sort of 10, 15 years ago. As I said, for 15 overs, you used to get 10, 15 overs worth of good swing out of it, which I felt made for good games. You know, opening batsmen could still play their shots at the top and the ball kind of went off the bat nicely. But if you bowled well, you kind of were in with a chance and, you know, have a couple of slips in. It just slips almost seem a little bit pointless these days. The ball doesn't really seem to go there that much in one day cricket. So I'd say the balls are the main thing. I don't know what you'd have to speak to Kookaburra, or they'll probably say they've done nothing. Or whether it be the size of the seams or something's changed in those balls in 10 years to make them not swing as much. And sort of that being my trade, and plus a bit of reverse swing at the end, I suppose with the two new white balls, you rarely see any reverse swing these days.
When you use white balls over... in 2020 and 40 over cricket over here,
Are they Kookaburra or are they Dukes?
Yeah.
They're Kookaburra as well. Yeah. Okay, so we only use the red Duke's ball then?
Yes.
With the more protruded seam, which in turn helps the,
does
helps
a bit
the seam.
More.
Yeah, maybe that needs to be addressed as well, the choice of the ball, you know, as scores inflate ever further.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not so concerned about the changes in bat technology. The dimensions of the face of the bat remain the same as they should. Brett Lee spoke some common sense on this when he was asked about it a fortnight ago. He said, well, if Chris Gayle wants to pick up a 4-pound bat and hit me out of the ground, then good luck to him.
Yeah,
I absolutely understand that. I think that's a common sense way of looking at it. What is regressive and frustrating is that the ICC, in their wisdom, take one more fielder out from the outfield and stick him in the inner ring. And so now you have five in the inner ring, only four round the outfield, which is shortened comically in certain places around the world, India in particular. And it just recalibrates, or rather kind of unnerves, that balance between bat and ball. And that is a big problem. That is the essence of the game.
Because I guess with...
And you have to protect that, you know, and they don't. They don't protect it enough. They don't recognise it enough. And so this talk about addressing bat compression and so on, it's all phony to me.
But with the modern players, as you say, that, I mean, modern players are much fitter and stronger than they've ever been. So they're going to hit the ball further.
Yeah.
The sweet spots are bigger. And then on top of that, if they're changing where players can and can't stand in the field, then it's all gearing towards more excitement because you see the ball going out of the park a bit more. But I just want to, on that excitement factor, there's an interesting piece last year which Mike Atherton wrote in The Times about the thing which most recently really captured people's excitement was Mitchell Johnson running in and taking wickets.
Absolutely.
And as a bowler, Tim, do you not think that, you know, a hat-trick ball, is there anything more exciting than that?
No, it's, as I say, going back to the balls, you know, if the ball's swinging around a bit, you don't want it doing too much in one-day cricket, even though it's great for your figures. I've always been on the side of I'd rather have a 300 chases down a 300 game than a sort of 220 plays, 210. You know, sometimes those games are interesting, but, you know, generally one-day cricket is for the fans and you want to see sixes and fours without it getting extreme. And, you know, teams scoring 460 or whatever is obviously too far the other way. But so you want to encourage the bowlers because otherwise you're just going to have no one really wanting to become a bowler, you know. And I don't really blame them.
That is the fear. Already you are looking at, you're seeing professional bowlers who are moving away from the first class game in favour of 20 and 50 over and 40 and 50 over cricket. The fear is if the balance continues to be weighed in favour of the batsman, then where are your next batch of quicks? You know, who if you're 15 years old and you've got and you're a natural athlete, who would pick up a ball and run in from the sight screen when you can pick up a bat and everything is in your favour? Mm. So it is something to address, but I think we're directing it at the wrong area. I don't think it's the compression of bats. I don't because things move on. Funnily enough, we did our magazine gear test at Lords this morning and Ali Brown was in the nets. Now, you might have even played in that match, Mertz, when he hit 260-odd. You know, you've certainly been around the club. 260-odd, 15-odd years ago for Surrey. That's still not being broken, you know. Maybe bats were better in 99 than they are in 2015. I don't know, but... Yeah, but I mean, I think there's a lot of phony hot air around this one.
Absolutely, and just to finish on that, the only man to ever hit a ball over the pavilion here at Lords was Albert Trott.
Albert Trott,
a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
I still can't believe that.
No, it's
he must have middled it.
Who did we have? We played the West Indies here, and Pollard hit Sean Newdall not far off going over. It was kind of. Over the pavilion. It was up above our dressing room there. And that was one of the biggest hits I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute beast of a man with one of these modern bats. So, like, Albert Trott, I still can't actually believe that...
Let's not get the truth in the way of the
Yeah,
story,
okay.
It's a lovely story.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Domestic T20 cricket. Now, after the success of the Australian Big Bash this Christmas... All eyes now turn to the NatWest T20 Blast in England. With huge crowds, exciting games and innovative TV coverage, I knew I'd slip over that word, the Big Bash was an overwhelming success story. So what can we learn from it? Or can we?
This is one for Tim, I think. You play in this, in our version, or rather our pale imitation of the worldwide 20 over leagues. You play, you know, last year you'd have played every Friday and so on and so on. It drags its way, its heels through the summer. At the time, it's worth remembering that back in March, April time, when it was all announced, there was a kind of, broadly amongst the counties, there was a positive feel about it. Friday night crowds, yeah. You know, the narrative will run over a whole summer. From a playing point of view, though, what's your feeling?
The biggest thing that the players found last year was sort of not having it blocked meant that it was difficult to practice different formats. We quite often had a four-day game followed by a T20 the day after or something like that, and guys found it very difficult to practice specific white ball training if they're playing in the four-day game as well. So that was the biggest thing, which, you know, I always felt in a block in July, August, whenever it is, seems to me, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it or doing all the research, obviously, has gone into it, but that just seems to be a better format for me. Everyone can concentrate on 2020 cricket for that month.
Yeah, I can see that.
From the player's point of view, that seems the easiest and best way, but obviously there are marketing sides and various other things. Some counties love Friday nights, some don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to Essex or Somerset or even Hove, I think they kind of sell out those games and sort of have great crowds. So it's so different depending where you are and which county you're at.
You've played for Surrey and Middlesex. In the proposed franchise system, Surrey and Middlesex would become London, if you like.
Yeah.
You've played for both. You know both clubs. What would your feeling be if that became the eventuality?
There'd probably be more Surrey players in the team than Middlesex players, judging by the past 3 or 4 years in T20.
Could you summon the same kind of passion to play for London than you can to play for Surrey and then for Middlesex? Would it mean as much?
Possibly not to me, personally, but... you know, to the younger players, that may not be as big an issue. And if it's something that you got used to year on year, you know, I'm sure sort of if guys are professional and they, you know, they want to do well for whoever they're playing for. And I think the biggest thing for players is the crowds. If they're playing in front of big crowds, you know, I don't think it would matter too much if it was a London or Middlesex. But me personally, would find it strange. You know, I don't play a massive amount of T20 cricket for Middlesex now, but it was something that I was kind of, I just remember those first few years at Surrey, and it was a great tournament. And you know, I ran a bowl out, took my shirt off, ran around like a lunatic, I was a footballer, all that. So I kind of watching the Big Bash, I think it's a great tournament, but I'd like to see in 3, 4, 5 years' time if it's still as exciting then. Because I remember the first 3 or 4 years over here, it was great. We had crowds that we'd never seen before for county games. I remember playing here for Surrey against Middlesex and it being packed out. So whether that same kind of thing will happen and it will die down a bit in Australia, I'm not quite sure. So I kind of reserve judgment a little bit on how successful the Big Bash is compared to here, because I think you have to, you know, we've been going for 10, 12 years or whatever. I agree something perhaps needs to be freshened up, and there are various things that you can do, but players being mic'd up, that's happened here since 2003. And you know, I remember those early days, there was bumble in jacuzzis around the boundary.
Absolutely. All the gimmicks and all the touches have existed in the English game for a decade and more. I personally am unconvinced by the franchise system. I don't think that there's a great groundswell out there of people saying, do you know what we need? We need, you know, the West Country versus Greater London versus the Midlands versus the North West. I just don't really see that there's any great passion for that, certainly amongst the punters. I do think that there's an issue about when it's scheduled. I can see that. But then there's pros and cons to that as well. You know, if we condense it into a four-week period, say through the summer holidays when kids can be available and it rains for 2 weeks, then you have a damp squib of a tournament. So I think there's a lot of hand-wringing around this. I think in reality, people go to the cricket as and when they want to. They pick and choose their fixtures. People are not going to spend £200 on you know, 8 home games at £25 a pop. They're going to pick and choose. As we saw here last year, the game, the Middlesex Surrey game, was packed here last year. Forget
sold out, yeah.
Sold out. Forget what happened 5 or 6 years ago. I think people pick and choose their battles. And so, yeah, I'd reserve judgment just like Tim would, especially.
I think a lot of players push that. You know, you see a lot of players on Twitter going, how great the Big Bash is. And
it's a marketing triumph, the Big Bash.
Yeah, and it's all about kind of the crowds and probably the money that comes into it as well. That's bottom line. You know, players want to play in front of big crowds. They want to get paid more. They see that happening as a franchise system. But whether it work here or not, as I say, I agree. Like, I'm not convinced by that. So anyway, we'll see what happens next year or so.
So I guess, you know, just because it works in Australia, it doesn't mean it will necessarily translate over here.
No.
So fair argument. Well, to finish the podcast, I'd like to give you both a quiz. It's called Who's Who of the Past World Cups. So I've delved into Crick Info's archive, I'm not going to lie, and I've picked out three players that played for teams over the years in previous World Cups. Just to give you a clue, they all were part of teams in the current World Cup.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the player's name, and all you have to do is tell me who they played for.
Right.
So easy. Some cricket badges here might be able to get these quite easily. I don't know.
Far away.
So is it just...
Are we buzzing in here?
You know, you're going up against each other.
Okay.
That's how I do it. So, Tim, you can go first. And it's the best of three.
Right.
So, which country did John Morrison play for?
John Morrison. New Zealand?
Phil?
Canada.
You haven't listened to the...
Oh, sorry, from this load. All right.
They did play in previous World Cups, but they are all part of these teams, just to make it a bit easier.
Okie dokie. Scotland.
Tim, 1-0, New Zealand.
Get in.
Right.
Former New Zealand opening batsman, represented the Black Caps in 1975 and 79.
Just Danny Morrison, because he was a New Zealand player. Well,
there you go. So, 1-0.
That was a guess.
Phil, you go first with this one. Which country did Azhar Zaid play for?
The UAE.
Can I say the same, or?
I can say the same if you want.
I'm going to say Pakistan.
Oh, it's leveled up. 1-1. Phil, you're correct. Played for the United Arab Emirates. He was an all-rounder opening batsman who played for them in the 1996 World Cup.
There you have
it. He was their joint top wicket taker.
There was also a lad who played in that UAE team who wore a floppy sun hat and batted three against Alan Donald and got
Sultan Zerawani.
That's your boy. Got sconed by
Donald. Do I get a bonus point for that?
No, sorry, Tim.
I remember watching that. He walked out in a floppy.
Yeah.
Thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Impressive.
Hit on the head. See you, mate. off he went.
Right. 1-1. Exciting finish. Here we go.
Thrill a minute, this.
Absolutely. Which country, Tim, did Malcolm Jarvis play for?
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, Zimbabwe.
Right, you both are correct there.
Right,
top knowledge.
So you need a tiebreaker here, William.
I'm out. That's it. That's all you get.
All right, well,
so I win it for the Sultan Zerawani.
I think you do, yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, well, Malcolm Jarvis.
You could have that.
Represented him in the 1987 and 1992 World Cup.
All right, there you go.
Good knowledge, both. Well done. And just to finish off, Tim, what have you got coming up over the next few weeks? Are you going to be fighting fit for the start of the season with Middlesex?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a pre-season tour going to Abu Dhabi March 10th, I think. So the plan is to be fit and playing for that. You know, there's an outside chance if someone goes down for Ireland in the World Cup that, you know, I want to be fit and able to put my hand up and be available for selection if and when that kind of came around. So that's the plan. So be back playing. As I said, I've started kind of bowling this week, just very gentle stuff. It's still reasonably early in terms of fractures and how long they take to heal, but we are ahead of schedule. And to be playing out in Abu Dhabi would be great, and be sort of fully fit for the start of the English season here.
Great stuff. And when's your first benefit gig?
First benefit gig, we've got this curry night, as I said, in the Household Cavalry in Knightsbridge, which will be really good on the 30th of April. So very much looking forward to that, and managed to convince Straussi to come along and do a bit of a Q&A and various other players that I'll be sort of twisting their arm to get to do stuff throughout the year. So if they don't know that already, be prepared. So yeah, that's the first event, and hopefully kick off will be a really good year.
Great stuff. Well, all the rest of the best of the season. Phil, what have you got coming up?
Well, it's the AOC All Out Cricket gig that we just keep on rolling with. We've got some new World Cup videos that we've taken the plunge with. So we've got our first World Cup preview video out at the minute. 10 minutes of shambolic, glorious nonsense available on our website, alloutcricket.com. The new magazine will be out in 3 weeks from now. The current World Cup preview issue is out with an exclusive with Owen Morgan in there. We've got columnists on the website, Herschel Gibbs, Jason Gillespie, Ravi's in there as well. All kinds of World Cup loveliness on alloutcricket.com. So there's my plug done.
Absolutely. Who's your cover star on the next issue?
It's Morgan. Morgan is the cover star out at the moment. And the mid-World Cup issue, which will be up and running in 3 weeks' time, will depend on how England go.
Sultan Zarawani.
You never know. Cult heroes, maybe, the World
UAE Cup. Might have won a couple of games.
And it might even be Paul Sterling. You never know. If he smashes it, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, many thanks for coming on, both. Hope you've enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, great.
Great stuff. Well, many thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's at Homer Cricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.